From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. No FPL this weekend, but we have plenty to chew over. Double game weeks, chip strategy, and how soon do you go back to Mo? Hello, thanks for joining us on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Do not worry, we know it's been a frustrating game week so far with an average score of just 30 points and there might not be any FPL this weekend, but we do have an abundance of good news for you over the next 40 minutes or so. Firstly, the game week isn't over yet with Burnley versus Watford a week on Saturday and we also have a double game week in 27 to look forward to. But the best news of all, of course, we have a stellar panel of French football expert Julien Laron alongside me. Morning, Jules.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, everyone.
It's a big hello again to Lars Sivertsen. Morning, Lars.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're also rejoined by FPL Black Boxes Az Phillips, who I'm sure is going to be even smugger this week after he has risen through the ranks again. Hi, Az.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Oh, look, he's pretending to be embarrassed and all humble.
But he was so hoping that it would be on this week. You know, when you have a really good week, say, yes, I'm on the show, get in.
To be fair, Az has quite a few good weeks. We'll look at that a little bit more very shortly. Let's give you details of the tricky game week 23 so far, which is one of the lowest scoring in FPL history, with only three of the most owned 20 players bringing in more than 5 points. Aaron Ramsdale, Antonio Rudiger and Mason Mount. If it makes you feel any better, I benched two of those three. The most captained player, Emmanuel Dennis, was sent off in the first of Watford's double game weeks, just days before his manager was sacked in the wake of that 3-0 defeat to Norwich. He now misses their second game week fixture at Turf Moor. That game at Vicarage Road also saw a surprise early top scorer with Josh Sargent getting 13 points. He was joined by João Moutinho on the same points as he scored his second goal in three league matches against Brentford. And Thiago Silva also scored the same against Spurs. After our pod chat last week on Aston Villa, Luca Digne and Emi Buendia combined as they beat Everton by a goal to nil. Plus, there were clean sheets for Arsenal, Manchester United and Chelsea, ending their run of one from their last 11. Let's see where our panellists are and who's relying on a miracle from Joshua King or Matej Vidra. Jules, come on then, let's get this out of the way. You're 1 point ahead of me, which normally I'd be like, that's okay. We're in another head-to-head, aren't we? You're leading me by 1 point going into this final game. I would like to point out, though, 1 point is more than achievable for me.
Yeah. I think you should win this one. I don't have anyone else to play. I had, obviously, Emmanuel Dennis up front. And as you said, he's going to be suspended. So I'm afraid I think you're going to get over me and then I will never hear the end of it, of course.
You also captain Cancelo, so you weren't totally burnt by Emmanuel Dennis. And it's something we've talked about a few times, isn't it? Mm. Whether we're brave enough to captain a fullback. You were, and I understand why, but just the 4 points from him.
Yeah, just the 4 points. I thought he could do something really interesting at Southampton. We've mentioned it. Remember, had this great week where he had 16 points, I think, and I captained him, which was great. I wanted to go for Ramsdale, and until the end, I thought, Let's go for Cancelo. Literally the last minute before deadline almost. And I wish I'd stick to my first instinct, which was Ramsdale. I knew the clean sheet there was pretty solid. But I just thought Cancelo would have a better game against Southampton than actually he did.
Captaining a fullback would have been brave, but wow, captaining in a goalkeeper would have been even braver. So I'd have been very impressed. Also, maybe thought you were slightly balmy, especially if it didn't pay off. But anyway, talking of brave decisions, Lars, you brave, brave man, you did the Watford striker double up. Did you get double game week over excitement?
Maybe, but I think, listen, Watford, for all their troubles, they have scored goals pretty consistently. They've scored the same number of goals as Brighton. They've scored more goals than Wolves. No, they do score some goals. So I figured when they had a game week against pretty sort of not very good opponents, it was worth going all in. I mean, bringing in King wasn't the big problem, really. It was Captain Dennis. I fell into that trap as well, unfortunately. So here we are.
Yeah, you also brought in Kevin De Bruyne, which is a lovely transfer. I like that. You took a minus four, but he returned 8 points. He's one of those players I feel a lot of managers at the moment would love to have, but can't quite get to him.
Well, I brought him in with the idea being that I'm going to go back to Salah anyway at some point. I might as well have one very big, very expensive midfielder so I don't accidentally spend all the money I had in the bank. But no, that worked out really well. But I do have a dilemma now because his fixture list is pretty good and he's been in good shape. So I'll be tempted to maybe hold off on bringing Salah back in. We'll talk about that later. But that's such a difficult decision to make. Aside from that, yeah, I feel like as much as this was a bad weekend for a lot of people, and it wasn't a good weekend, I mean, my game week rank is very bad. I feel like it could have been even worse. So, I mean, that's the consolation here.
Yeah, 27 points for Lars. There's not really a way for me to go from Lars's 27 points to Az's 45 points. Sorry, Lars.
Just one is good and the other one is not so good. You know?
That sounds like a good intersection to me.
He's wiped the floor with all of us. He's up to 3,700 in the world. And talking of Lars making an inspired transfer, you made one this week as well, Az.
Yeah, I don't know what everyone's complaining about. It was a good week. Yeah, I brought in Luca Dean this week, just purely a long-term move. The fixtures are so nice for Aston Villa. There's two amazing fixtures to be rescheduled at some point in Burnley and Leeds. And there was a big weakness on the left-hand side for Villa that Gerrard wanted to address by bringing him in terms of the attacking potential.
I really wondered if Gerrard would play him because he was Everton and because of sort of the animosity and the tension, and that's why I didn't bring him in, and I should have been like brave-ish like Az, because it was clearly a very good move.
I think Matt Target just hasn't really been doing what Gerrard wants down that left-hand side. So I think quite a few people were worried whether there might be a bit of rotation, because Target's a good player and very good defensively. But Gerrard just expects so much from those fullbacks, and Dean offers so much more. So that's why I wanted to bring him in. And I think other than Trent, I think he's probably the standout defender to own going forward. So I'm glad I've got him in place.
Also, Az, the rest of us all had Emmanuel Dennis. You avoided him. What did you know that we didn't?
Well, I was very close. I've got to be honest. I was very close to doing Ronaldo to Dennis, which would have been a bit of a nightmare transfer. I just didn't want to have two Watford strikers up front. Sorry, Kelly. I'm trying to just look at my team.
Neither would I.
I'm trying to just look at my team and think, any given week, am I going to be happy with the players that I've got in my side? And you always have different fires to put out. And when you end up with something like two Watford strikers or a player you don't really want, you end up having to do other moves, and then you get stuck with that player for weeks and weeks. So in the end, I just decided to keep Ronaldo. And I've got to admit, I did have a bit of a giggle when Dennis got sent off.
Well, a brilliant decision. You clearly saw that scoreline coming. I don't think too many people did at Vicarage Road. Watford losing 3-0 to Norwich City. Anyway, on to our FPL mini league. There's no change at the top, with Money Mace still in first position. But congratulations to Dusan, who has broken into the top 10 after getting a huge 42 points in game week 23 so far. That's almost as many as Az. The code is 1KIKS7 if you would like to join. So no FPL this weekend due to the international break for non-European players. But game week 23 continues next week on FA Cup weekend, as the only double game week fixture of this week between Watford and Burnley takes place. Roy Hodgson now in charge of the Hornets. And talking of doubles, there's another on the horizon which could affect our thinking for a number of reasons. Well, it was announced on Wednesday that Manchester United versus Brighton, which was originally planned for game week 18, has been moved to create a double game week 25 for both teams. The fixtures then are as follows. For Manchester United, they play Southampton at home and Brighton at home. For Brighton, it's Watford away and Manchester United away. But does this leave us with some tricky decisions, particularly, Jules, when I look at Cristiano Ronaldo in your team? Is he now a must-hold?
Yeah, certainly must. Well, I would have kept him anyway for just a little bit longer. I know it could be frustrating at times, and almost as frustrating as he is sometimes on the pitch with the rest of the team. But yeah, I still think that he only need half a chance to score two goals. So I would keep him. I know he cost a lot of money, but certainly now with a double game week, you could see him hopefully doing really well in those two games. Not doing an Emmanuel Dennis for sure, but yeah, I think now if you have him, you certainly have to keep him.
Yeah, no returns now for Ronaldo in the last four Premier League matches. He did miss one of those, but it has been a frustrating time to be his owner. Lars, what would you say to managers who were thinking of bringing him in?
Yeah, no, he hasn't been in great shape. And there is, I suppose he's always in great shape, really, Cristiano Ronaldo. But in terms of scoring goals, that hasn't really gone the way. And I think there's still a question mark where he really fits into the Ragnick template. And if you look at the double game week, I think it's almost kind of a more interesting defensive couple of games. And really, Man United defense, I think, is interesting right now. They've got a run of Burnley, Southampton and Brighton, then and those two in the double game week. Then Leeds, which is maybe a bit more iffy, but then Watford at home. I mean, you're expecting at least three, maybe four clean sheets there, to be honest, because they've been okay defensively recently. I've got David De Gea myself. And if he's going to play regularly, I think Diogo Dalot is a player to look at, really.
As for you, you brought in Bruno Fernandes when everyone was getting very excited about Cristiano Ronaldo, another of your master strokes. I imagine you're even happier to own him now.
Yeah, this one feels a little bit dirty because I didn't really believe in him when I brought him in. I just had a kind of a Salah-shaped hole to fill. And with the double game week, he seemed like the kind of obvious move, especially with Son getting injured too. He's a hold for me, but I think people are getting quite excited about him again. I think a lot of his returns were quite fortuitous over that double game week. His stats haven't improved massively over the last couple of weeks. He's creating a chance around the same amount of time on average over the last 2 weeks. He has done kind of for the rest of the season where he's been quite poor. His XG is the same, 0.2 on average. The only thing that's really improved massively is his shot accuracy, which is up to 50% from 25.6, which makes me think it's not really a sustainable sort of output for him sort of going forward. So he's a hold for me, but I think Ronaldo is the obvious choice for the double game week if you're looking to buy a United attacker. I think with Salah and De Bruyne, that I would be favouring those two over Fernandes. I can't see United scoring too many goals in that double game week. Southampton and Brighton aren't pushovers.
So is it a case of don't be blinded again by the double game week here, but if you've got Ronaldo, he's a good option?
I think so. I think if you've got Ronaldo and a defender, like Lars mentions, I think you're pretty much set. I wouldn't be sort of ripping your team apart to be getting Fernandes in.
I mean, Southampton have only lost once at home this season. They're no mugs at home at all. And Brighton, as we know, are capable of keeping it very, very tight. So I have to say, United, as much as they've been slightly better recently under Ragnick, they're still not like free-flowing and going wild in attack.
Yeah, Ronaldo's got three of his four double-digit hauls at Old Trafford, with two of those coming in his last five home appearances. So potentially that game against Brighton, though Graham Potter's side have certainly proved they can be mean off position so far this season. Now, the reason this whole Manchester United double game week could affect our decision-making even more is because of a certain Egyptian returning from AFCON. A lot of people went for Ronaldo, put the funds up front during Mo Salah's absence, but his return is creeping up on us. His ownership has halved in recent weeks. But even if Egypt reach the AFCON final, there is 4 days before Liverpool's game week 24 match on the 10th of February against Leicester, which does also mean that Sadio Mane will also return then, even if he gets to the final with Senegal. Come on then, is Mo Salah must-have the moment he touches back down in this country, Jules?
I think so. The only thing I would say is if Egypt do win the African Cup of Nations, you can just imagine the wild celebration. It will be the first time in 12 years, I think, that they win it. It will be the first time that this Mo Salah generation wins it, which I think would be a very special moment. So it's not just 4 days between the final and the Leicester game. It's 4 days, but in those 4 days, there will be two wild days of celebration, you can imagine, where I don't think the players will sleep much. You could just imagine, especially a country like Egypt, how crazy it will be. So do you play him straight away at Leicester when he would have just come back and again would have played in the whole tournament plus the celebration, etc.? Same goes for Sadio Mane. Senegal have never won it, so it'll probably be even worse for them. Well, better but worse in terms of celebration for Liverpool. So I would wait really, really late to see what kind of fitness and shape Salah is, if they do win it or not, if Mane wins it or not, before maybe bring him in, because I still have a little question mark over Klopp just saying, you know what, have a rest for this match against Leicester. We're not going to play you. You need just a rest, recharge the batteries, blah, 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 etc., whatever way he puts it. And then he'd be ready for game week 25. So I don't know. Of course, it's obvious that whenever he comes back, we bring him in. But for that Leicester game, depending how far they both go, I would still wait a little bit and get the latest information before making a call of bringing him back.
Lars, you've got your Mo Salah placeholder there in Kevin De Bruyne. You've already said you don't know if you want to part company with him. Do you have another plan to get the Egyptian back in?
Well, the trouble is, just as Jules said, if Egypt win the whole thing, and it means he's played one or two extra games, it means he's had that extremely emotional experience of winning a tournament and celebrations and everything. No, it would be so, just on the human level, you can imagine that Klopp might want to give him a bit of a rest then. And so it's between Salah, who might get rested, and in my case, Kevin De Bruyne, who's got Brentford at home, which, with all due respect to Brentford, is the kind of game where you think that's not a bad game to have Kevin De Bruyne. So for me, if Egypt go all the way, I'll be very, very tempted to wait 1 week. But of course, it is terrifying not owning Mo Salah. You know, any time of he spends on the field, he can just suddenly score a hat trick, and then your overall rank is doomed for a long time. So it's a terrifying move if I end up doing it. But it all will really depend for me on how far Egypt go in the AFCON.
The fixture's slightly further ahead for Liverpool as well. Leicester, as we mentioned, then it's Burnley and Norwich, but they do blank in game week 27 due to being in the EFL Cup final. As at what point are you desperate to have Salah back in your team? Can you wait, as Lars is suggesting he might?
I think you've got to have him for game week 26 against Norwich at home. I think that's just a kind of non-negotiable. He's so obviously the best captain shout in that week. It's really interesting, though, in game week 24 and 25, because we talk about De Bruyne, we talk about Fernandes, and we talk about Salah. I mean, Fernandes has got Burnley and then a double game week. De Bruyne has got Brentford and then Norwich. And Salah's got Leicester, where, like we say, he might not be kind of, might not even play in that game, depending on how far Egypt get. And then he's got the Burnley game as well. So all three of those players have got really good fixtures. So if I was going to buy one for 25, I think I would lean towards Salah for the long-term move if I didn't own any of them. But if I had De Bruyne or Fernandes, I wouldn't be selling them for Salah, I don't think, until game week 26.
So is your plan to wait until game week 26?
My plan is to wait until game week 26 and take Fernandes out then for Salah. I'm hoping that Fernandes can match Salah in that match in 25.
Oh, but it'll be a painful watch. That said, all of your decisions do seem to pay off. So if you want to copy as listener, I don't think it's a bad idea. Anyway, looking elsewhere at Liverpool, which other players should we be looking at? Because it felt like before Mo Salah went away, a lot of people had the treble up with Salah, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Diogo Jota. But it feels like there's been a bit of a turning of the tide, Jules, in terms of form when it comes to some of the Liverpool players, particularly Andy Robertson.
Yeah, he was very good against Palace, better than Trent and better return of points, although Trent was very good against Brentford the game week before. It's just, I think that there might be a point where, because Trent is so much more than just a fullback, that I think teams that play against Liverpool will put a plan together to just make sure that Trent doesn't do anything. And then I think that leaves more freedom to Robertson on the other side. I don't think we are there just yet. I think Trent will be still very effective in all the game week to come. If you have him, keep him, of course. If you don't have him, you're crazy and you should give up the game. But the question is,
never give up, Jules.
No,
never
give
up.
The question is, could you get Robo and Trent in your team? You know, a lot of us have, some have Cancelo and Trent, some even have, or used to have, Reece James, Cancelo and Trent. Can you get Robertson and Trent together in your team? We don't really like to double up in defenders, because obviously if the team concede, then both of them lose the clean sheet points. But there's a case for it, for sure, because they're both so, so good right now. I think they are currently the best fullbacks in the country, even better than Cancelo.
Yeah, Trent Alexander-Arnold has created the most chances in the league with 58. And of course, he's a defender. Whilst Andy Robertson has scored more points in his last three matches with 32 than Diogo Jota has in his last seven. Jota getting just 30 in those last seven. How do we think Salah's return will affect Jota as? And how are we viewing Jota as an FPL asset at the moment?
Yeah, I think we can all be a little bit disappointed with Jota. When Salah and Mane went off to AFCON, I think we all had Jota in our teams. He was kind of, him and Trent were kind of the two picks that were in pretty much everyone's side. And, you know, he hasn't got a double-digit return over those games. I think he's got two goals and two assists or something like that, which on paper is kind of okay for an 8 million-ish midfielder. It's sort of just about kind of acceptable, but it's not really enough given how good he is, how good Liverpool have been attacking wise. They're the best attacking team in the league. So I'm looking to get rid of him. I think there's an opportunity with Jota when Salah and Mane are back. He's so highly owned in everyone's side. And I think a lot of people are going to keep him because his price has gone up and people can be worried about getting him back in. But we've seen with Firmino in the side that spot kind of rotates a little bit. And there's so many good midfielders in the Premier League at the moment that I like these kind of opportunities to go against one of the highly owned players. So I will be looking to get rid. And I think Robertson is an excellent replacement. I mean, five goal involvements in three starts for Robertson is crazy, crazy numbers.
What about you, Lars? How are you feeling about the Liverpool players? In terms of the treble up, will you be going for that once again? And do you agree with Az that maybe now is the time to part company with Jota?
I feel like contradicting Az is a really dangerous thing to do. He's getting very good at this game. But just in defense of Jota, what I would say is that sort of the players who've been playing regularly this season in the entire league, he's got the highest non-penalty XG per 90, if I've got my numbers right here. So he is someone who, yes, he's had a bit of a dip at the time where we were expecting him to do the opposite. But he's still someone who's sort of consistently delivering really, really promising underlying numbers. And yes, there are other like exciting options, I guess, in that sort of price bracket. But then again, who are you actually getting? Are you getting sort of Rafinha? Are you getting, you know, Mason Mount, Jared Bowen? You know, it's not like his sort of XG per 90 is like almost twice as high as theirs. So I feel like with Bowen, unless you really plan to have three Liverpool players that are not Jota, I kind of feel like he's worth it, even with the slight rotation risk.
Whatever you do with your Liverpool players, remember they do blank in game week 27. And this links on nicely to our next section where we're going to talk about our chips and plans to use our chips. Because I've noticed, Az, you haven't used any of your chips so far. I know what you like. You're a strategic manager. We've talked about Liverpool. Are you going to be using any of your chips to navigate their blank game week or potentially get any players back in or maybe take advantage of doubles later down the line?
Yeah, I think I'll almost certainly be using one of my free hits in game week 27. Liverpool and Arsenal have a blank and I've currently got five players in my squad from those two teams. So rather than sort of transferring those players out, I can not really worry about them and, you know, target other players and then just use that free hit to kind of get ahead. It's an interesting game week that week. Spurs have got a good fixture against Leeds. I currently don't have any Spurs players, so bringing in Kane and Son might be a good idea. Also, there's good games for teams like Southampton, who are playing Norwich. So someone like Broya could come in. And also Palace as well, are playing Burnley at home, and I don't have players from that. So I think that's a good week to kind of get some players I wouldn't look to have long-term, but I can sort of target short-term gains with those teams.
What about you, Jules and Lars? Either of you got any plans where to use any of your chips? Jules, I noticed you used one of your free hits in game week 20.
Yeah, when you had all those team blanking. To be fair, I had no idea at all. Not having even thought about it before I was talking. I said, yeah, I think I'm going to use it for game week 27, you know, because Liverpool and Arsenal blank that week and I've got five players of them. So I think considering the team that I have and the teams are not playing in that game week 27, it would make a lot of sense for me to try to use one of my chips to cover myself.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because often people use a free hit chip to make advantage of when there's a big double game week in a normal season. We often use it at the end of the season when all the doubles come in and we have those bumper game weeks. But this season is a little bit different, isn't it, Lars? And we are going to have those blanks in 27. Have you lined up your free hit chip for then, or is there somewhere else that's catching your eye?
Again, like you're going against Az twice in like 5 minutes here on the pod. Just feels wrong. It's like my danger, my spidey sense is tingling. I just think, with so many postponed games, there are just going to have to be a lot of double game weeks, and some of them might appear suddenly and without warning. So I just like the idea of having quite a lot of chips in reserve as the spring progresses. And I might not have as many of the players who are involved at that weekend. So I'll see if I can find a way around it, actually, even though I obviously see as flawless logic as a being as clever as it is.
I think one thing I like about playing it in a blank game week is that you kind of almost guarantee yourself points because you're taking out players who physically don't have a game. Whereas if you use the free hit in a double game week, the single game week players you take out could actually outscore the double game week players that you bring in. And I hate the idea of using a free hit and being down on points on something that I could have just stuck with, which is why I tend to favour a blank game week. But you're right, there will almost certainly be opportunities to use them if you don't use it in 27.
Take that, Lars. You want to take on Az? This is your answer, man. Take that.
Yeah, because you're right, because as it turns out, it's entirely feasible that you could be really hyped for a double game week and then your captain gets a red card. That's a thing that happens.
Surely that would never happen.
Dennis the Menace. A reminder, there are currently 18 games that need rearranging, either from past postponements or the known blanks that we've talked about due to the Club World Cup or the EFL Cup final. The teams that will blank in the coming weeks are Chelsea in game weeks 24, 25 and 27, Brighton in game week 24, Arsenal in game week 25 and 27, and then Leicester and Liverpool in 27 too. So there is plenty for us to consider at the moment, making our next section more important than ever. Okay, so we are now moving on to the long view. Even game week 24 does feel pretty far away at the time of recording, but this section is using the fixture difficulty rating to look at each team's next six fixtures and focus on some with good runs or some with potentially bad ones. The FDR is available to view on the Premier League website. Let's start with Southampton then, because they are creeping up the ticker after facing Spurs away and Manchester United away. The Saints do have a really strong looking next six matches: Everton, Norwich, Villa, Watford, Burnley, Leeds. Is there any value at St Mary's at the moment, Jules?
100%. We talked about Armando Broja, I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe, or 3 weeks ago, saying that his ratio of shots on target is pretty incredible for such a young player. I mean, he's always hitting the target, and I think that makes him so, so dangerous. We saw that even against the City in the City game. He had that goal that was rightly disallowed for a slight offside, but he was always such a threat. I mean, he's so strong and he's got good pace. He runs in behind, but he can hold the ball up. And again, he's a very selfish, I think that's how we put it with Lee Bonfield, how selfish he is. Not in a bad way, it's just that he just thinks about scoring and goals and hitting the target all the time. And I think as a striker, this is so valuable. So he's still quite cheap, and I think it's very tempting to bring him in. If you, let's say you have already, there's room for you in your team for a player like him on that kind of budget, I think definitely go for him.
Yeah, 5.2 million. He does feel like a bit of an enabler, doesn't he? We like a cheap forward, especially with the likes of Mo Salah coming back, Ronaldo having a double game week. What about James Ward-Prowse? Because he returns consistently and feels like he's in a really good run of form at the moment. 6.3 million. Or is the issue, Lars, that there's just too many other players around that price point who are in better form?
Yeah, not for me is the short version here. As much as James Ward-Prowse is an admirable player, and his set-piece delivery means, you know, he can always grab your points out of nowhere, really whether Southampton are playing that well or not.
It does feel like with most of these Saints options, other than maybe Broja, we can say, yeah, they're good options, but there's just better alternatives. How are you viewing Southampton? Is there anyone there catching your eye as?
Well, Ward-Prowse is interesting because you called him consistent, and from an FPL perspective, he hasn't typically been that. He's got six attacking returns in his last six games, but before that, he had seven blanks in a row. And he's someone who I've always really liked as a player. He had a good season last year, got 156 points, up from 117 the year before. So he's steadily been improving these kind of outputs on his attacking stats, but I don't fully trust him to deliver consistently. Surely he can't keep relying on free kicks to keep scoring. I know he's absolutely incredible at them, but his rate of scoring from free kicks, his conversion rate is absolutely astronomical. And Southampton just don't score that many goals overall. I think Jules is completely right that Broja is the one that I'd pick. I think he's an absolute gift at 5.1 million. When you're looking to get in players like Salah, Fernandes, De Bruyne, if you want to keep Ronaldo, you've got Trent, Cancelo, you need these cheaper options. And Broja's the standout striker, I think, right up to about 7 million.
Oh, don't we miss the days where Tino Livramento was a brilliant option. 4 million he started the season at, but of course he's injured at the moment. And actually for Southampton, no clean sheet since game week 11. They don't have any double game weeks planned so far, but they do have one game in hand. So maybe Armando Broja is one to keep on your radar when that one is announced. Now just below Southampton, West Ham are there, but they've suffered two defeats in a row now. Their next four are Watford, Leicester, Newcastle, and Wolves before they face Liverpool. They actually only face one of last season's top four between game week 34, although they don't have any games in hand. So no double game weeks on the horizon as of yet. For those with both Jared Bowen and Mikel Antonio, how long should there be a double up as?
Bowen is non-negotiable. He's kind of the main attacking threat now that West Ham pose. His stats are incredible. You know, I talked earlier about maybe selling Jota because ownership is so high, but I wouldn't be getting rid of Bowen given the form that he's in and how good attacking-wise West Ham are. Antonio is an interesting one. He kind of is only really surviving in my team because I can't really find a better alternative in that kind of striker spot. But I think if you're not five in midfield, maybe moving him out for someone like Mount potentially, or a Man City midfielder like Foden, who's around the same price, could be a decent pick. He's got Watford next though, and I do fancy anyone playing against Watford at the moment, even though there might be a new manager bounce. But long term wise, I think Antonio could be a sell.
I'm for once. Yes, I can completely agree with Az and feel good about it. Because I feel like I'm in the exact same position. I've been holding Antonio for so long. And every week I'm looking at it like, kind of want someone else. And then you look at who the other people are and you think, well, I feel like they're... Yeah. But he scored like, what, it's two in the last 14 or something. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
His goals have dried up in a big, big way. And I mean, this is also slightly long view related. I think Ollie Watkins is a very similar price with Aston Villa's fixtures coming up and then looking pretty positive under Steven Gerrard. That feels like a very natural swap for me to move towards.
Yeah, I'd much rather have Watkins going forward than Antonio.
Antonio did get 40 points in the first three game weeks, and it does still feel like he's dining off those points a little bit, doesn't it? As is shaking his head as I say that. It's staggering, it's isn't it, really? He's got a good points total, but maybe we've been a little bit blinded by that.
And he's played like every game as well. I think we were a bit worried about the minutes he'd play and whether he'd pick up an injury and being the only fit striker.
And also now that he's playing for Jamaica, he has to travel. Before, he used to stay in London for the international break. And we've said that many times on the show. I think not just in terms of tiredness, but going to Jamaica, play those great games, is great for him to be an international player. But I think he takes a toll on you. And it's not surprising that he had that deep of form in the last couple of months, really.
Watkins, Ronaldo and Breuer would be my front three of choice.
Well, there you go then. You've heard it from the expert himself. They're the three forwards that you should have. Congratulations if you already have them. I don't. So anyway, moving on to a team with tough fixtures. Leicester City are second from bottom on the fixture difficulty rating. They've got some really tricky fixtures with a game week 27 blank as well due to the EFL Cup final. But they do have four games in hand. James Maddison is a popular Foxes player at the moment. Jules, would you be holding on to him at the minute?
I'm not sure. I know he's had great return lately and he's clearly hit form again. I just don't think you can rely on Leicester and Maddison, Daka, the defence, whoever you want, Tielemans. They've had some really good games and then we've got the Spurs game, for example. They beat Liverpool and they play great. They're solid. They don't concede. And then they're capable of conceding two in 15 seconds at the end of the game against Spurs. So I know Maddison is attacking returns anyway. It's a bit different. But I don't know. I don't have any Leicester players right now and I don't intend to get any of them.
What about Patson Daka? Three goals from his last three matches. You've been saying that you want forwards with form, Lars. Tempted?
No. No, just for the reason you just mentioned, you've got to play the fixtures a little bit as well. And I just, as much as there's a bit of a dearth of good striking options, I mean, do you really want to sub into a Leicester team that's in, you know, not great form, who are playing Liverpool, West Ham, Wolves, and then a blank? Like, that's not where I'm going with this.
I'd like to point out, I'm not considering bringing in Patson Daka. I was just suggesting it when you've all been moaning about there being no forwards. Now, as we know, you're not bringing in Patson Daka. Anyone else catching your eye at Leicester? With the fact they have four games in hand, it feels like we can't totally ignore them and have them off our radar completely.
Yeah, I think Daka's probably going to lose his place when Vardy's back fairly soon anyway. So I think he's a no-go going forward. If you maybe got his goal in the last game, you've probably got enough and done quite well out of that. Maddison, to me, would be a hold if I had him. I think I know the fixtures aren't too good, but his returns are decent. You know, scored against Tottenham. He blanked against Brighton, blanked against Liverpool, but he scored against Man City. You know, double digit against Newcastle, double digit against Southampton, double digit against Watford. Like he has been scoring well and he's so involved now in the attacks that the Leicester put together. Would I be buying a Leicester player though? Probably not. I think there's other priorities which you're going to want to address, getting those forward spots sorted and looking to get one of Salah, Fernandes and De Bruyne. So I think at the moment you can hold off on Leicester.
Yeah, they do have other players returning as well, so they could improve form-wise. One to watch maybe when those four games are rearranged. Now it is time, although the deadline for the next round of games isn't until the 8th of February, to ask our panel what their plans are as it stands. Okay, now we do know it's a long time until the next deadline, but it is the last time we'll hear from you guys before it. So let's check in with your teams and plans if nothing else was to change between now and the deadline. I know this season FPL, a lot of us have been burnt by making transfers and decisions too early. But let's just say, if you had to make your changes now, Lars, what would you be doing?
Well, I've still got Reece James knocking around on my bench, which feels like something...
Still? Oh my gosh!
Which feels like something that shouldn't still be happening. So, I mean, if I had to make some kind of sub, you threaten me and say, you have to use the sub today, Lars, or you will lose that sub, I would probably turn Reece James into Luka.
That's a terrible idea. Terrible idea. Just keep Reece James. He's very happy on your bench, warming the bench.
He's raising morale. He's like, he's a really very sociable guy.
He's a great teammate. Yeah, he's great to have in a dressing
room. Yeah, he'll be keeping Dennis and Keane company, I suspect, on my bench for a while now.
It does seem remarkable that Lars is waiting until Chelsea do blank to get rid of him, despite Reece James blanking.
Yeah, surely you get rid of Reece James.
Yeah, no, he's leaving for sure. The only question is, I mean, is it worth... I mean, if I do it now, then Luka Dean is getting injured in training tomorrow, isn't he? So it's one of those. But then he might lose some value, Reece James, if I don't do it. So it's a tricky one. I tend to wait with subs. But yeah, Reece James is almost certainly not in my team for the next game.
Yeah, it's the constant conundrum at the moment, isn't it? Where you want to beat the price rises, but you're aware that so much can happen, particularly with the deadline being so far away at the moment. What about you, Jules? What are your plans?
Well, I still have Patrick Vieira on my bench since his last season in 05, you know, because I like him there and he's good for the team now. I think Ding is, as you mentioned all through the show, I think he's a must-have now. I've got Joel Matip in the team that I brought in because he was a good option at the time. So I'm going to do a straight swap Ding for Matip, and then I think Armando Broja is probably the one that's coming up front as well.
Oh, look at that, copying Az's team, are you?
No, I think I said first Broja and he said Jules is so good at this game, and he's right, he's spot on. Broja is the way to go, you know. Oh, thank you, bro.
To be fair, I don't think you can knock the idea of literally just doing everything that Az says after his season so far. So come on then, tell us what move we should be making next, or what move you're making at least that we can all copy.
I'm not sure this pod is good for my ego, Kelly.
No, we don't build too much praise.
I think it's very good for your ego.
It depends which way you look at it, I think. no transfers for me lined up at the moment. I'm quite happy with my team going forward. I haven't got Dennis to worry about, with his ban. I've got a squad of 11 and a bench player as well. So fingers crossed, I don't have to make a move. It's interesting because my Salah move, I'm basically 0.1 off being able to get him. I need Fernandes to go up 0.1 and for Salah not to go up. Otherwise, I'm going to have to take a hit to get him in. So I'm hoping that this double game week means that more people buy Fernandes, even though I've tried to put people off a bit earlier on.
Yeah, not your wisest move potentially there. 0.1 away from getting Salah. But then you said before you weren't 100% sure on whether you were going to get Salah back straight away.
Yeah, the plan is definitely for 26. I think I can hold out on 25. It's going to be, I mean, Salah did blank against Burnley earlier in the season against all odds. So hopefully Sean Dyche's team can keep him quiet.
What about captaincy then? Az might not be bringing back Mo Salah. If you are bringing back Mo Salah, Jules, are you captaining him straight away?
No, I think I'll have Ramsdale just to show you down, because you said that, you know, you should never do it. If Salah is back, I think he's got a very strong case, of course, to be the captain.
What about you, Lars? Who's the armband going to?
Well, we already agree that Reece James is probably out of it here. I mean, his odds are no good. No, it comes back to the question of whether you bring Salah straight in or not. But I might end up holding Kevin De Bruyne.
What about you then, Az? You've said you're targeting teams that are playing Watford. They still haven't kept a clean sheet this season. Next up for them is West Ham. So are you going to be captaining Mikel Antonio?
No, definitely not. I think that the three premiums in Salah, De Bruyne and Ronaldo just have such a good fixture that I think the reliability of those and the chance of getting big hauls is too much. I think you should go with one of those if you've got them. If we get confirmation from Klopp that Salah's fine and ready to play, and you know he's not been partying too hard, then I think he's the obvious one if you're going to be bringing him in. If I had De Bruyne though, I think I would be very, very tempted by him at home to Brentford. I think that he's been absolutely incredible over the last few weeks, and playing, you know, 90 minutes or close to it in all the games as well, which I think is a massive boost for Man City. So if Salah's not fit or not ready to start, then I'd say De Bruyne is your best bet.
Do you think we're going to be heading back to the Salah perma captaincy scenario that we had before he left?
Yeah. I think like we've seen there hasn't really been a player in his absence that's really stepped up and can deliver the kind of consistent returns that he does. He's an absolute gift this season, really. It's a bit, I say a gift. I mean, it's a bit of a show. It has been quite fun giving the captaincy to different players, but it's been nice in a way not to have to worry about it and just give it to Salah.
Well, thank you guys for joining me today and to everyone listening. It's been brilliant to have your company. There may not be any Premier League this weekend, but there will still be plenty of FPL content on the Premier League app and website. So make sure you check those out. A reminder again, we would love your votes at the Sports Podcast Awards. If you could be so kind, just visit www.sportspodcastawards.com to register your vote. Your next FPL deadline, as I've said, isn't until the 8th of February. So pop that in your calendars and we'll be back with a huge Game Week 24 preview next Thursday. Bye-bye.